All right. This is Adam Thompson. Most of you already know him. He's going to talk to us about disk imaging.
This came up a few months ago. Actually, I don't see John Lang here tonight. When John was arguing with me that DD was a perfectly acceptable way to do disk imaging, and why would you ever need anything else? So unfortunately, John's not here tonight for the
rebuttal.
But he'll be up online later anyway. Okay, quick question. Who's done any sort of disk imaging, partition cloning, that kind of stuff?
Tonight, right here.
What's that?
I did it tonight, right here.
Okay, well, I just did it too, so we're even. Okay, so it looks like about two-thirds of the room has actually done this at some point. Well, do it in. Okay, that says who. That's better. I love open office and black backgrounds. It works so well together. there are bullet points there, by the way.
Yes.
Light gray on black, or dark gray on black. Who should use disk imaging, or who might profit from it? Users, sysadmins, tech support, vendors, that's your basic list. Users, primarily for backup and restore, that's the corollary to backup. System administrators, as you're deploying PCs to people, you give them a consistent image that you're always starting from a baseline, and it's a lot faster than reinstalling Windows XP 7,000 times. Tech support. Doing support, I use disk imaging. I'll take an image of a machine that somebody brings in with problems, so that if I make the problems worse and have no idea what I did to make them worse, I can always just roll back to bit for bit an exact copy of what they brought in. And at least then they're worse off, and we can try a different approach. And vendors use disk imaging as a routine matter because it's really the only time-effective way to get a set of software onto disks that you're shipping out the door.
There's another group that uses it. Computer forensics guys.
Okay, yes, that's a good point. Computer forensics. If you're looking at a system that's been compromised or you suspect there's been criminal activity happening on the system, depending on the level of sophistication that you suspect might be involved, the nature of the criminal, sometimes your first step might be to take an image, bit for bit, exact, of the hard drive so that you don't accidentally destroy your own evidence trail, among other reasons. I'm not a forensics expert. I'm not going to get into that beyond what I just said. Well, that one's in white. What is disk imaging? But the bullets aren't. Go figure. So what is disk imaging? Reading, disk imaging, partition imaging, by the way, I'm using these terms interchangeably tonight. Really, it's the difference that we're all used to in Linux between a disk, and dev SDA, and the partition, dev SDA1. Just a question of whether you're imaging everything or part of it. So what it is you're reading an exact copy. There's no such thing as lossy compression for disk images. Unlike JPEGs, any compression you do has to be lossless. The point is you want to be able to restore exactly what you just took an image of. Writing that image that you just read to another disk, to optical media, to a file on a file server, or just a file on another hard drive, the multiple destinations that are all perfectly valid targets. Lastly, writing an image back onto a disk or a partition, whether it's the same disk or a new disk. Those are basically the three core components of disk imaging. there's a lot of disk imaging solutions that add really intricate or really scalable or really innovative networking support. It's not my intention to get into the details of that tonight, but I can certainly answer most questions. Where? This might be when, but whatever. I'm calling it where. You can do disk imaging while you're running an OS. Typically, imaging the drive that you're running off of is a losing proposition, although there actually are ways to do that if you're using a volume manager. Either LVM under Linux or built into Windows VSS. You can actually take a bit exact image of the drive you're running from. which still blows my mind as an old school guy, but whatever. Much more common is you've booted from CD, or you've booted from floppy, or you've booted from the network, or you've booted off a USB key. And booting off USB key all extend to you've booted off a USB hard drive. Really, it's conceptually exactly the same thing. Basically, the easy way is don't do the disk you're actually running off. If you're doing a lot of imaging, typically you'll have a Linux box or something with an IDE cable hanging outside the case, just because that's the easiest and fastest way to do it. You laugh, but...
I laugh because I've been there.
Yep, a couple of cables just hanging out the back of your case. Now you can do disk imaging on the source machine with the hard drive in place. You can do imaging on the target machine with the target hard drive in place. You can do it on a dedicated transfer machine where you bring all of the hard drives involved to that machine. Usually that's for when you're doing bulk imaging or in forensics-based applications. Or you can do it on the network, across the network, I should say, using some combination of the above. It's fairly common to run an imaging program on the source machine and the same imaging program on the target machine and have them pipe the image over the network from station A to station B. It's pretty common, whether you're using Ghost under DOS or Hard Image under Linux or whatever, and it also means you don't have to take any machines apart to do it, or burn any CDs, or... When would you want to do imaging? When you're replacing a hard drive is probably the most common scenario, because if you take your average machine, you put pop a new hard drive in, what do? Reinstall from scratch. Reload all your apps from scratch. Reconfigure all your preferences from scratch. And exactly, you know, a week later, you've got a machine that kind of looks like the one you started with. If all that's dead is your hard drive, or this assumes your hard drive isn't quite dead, if all that's dying is your hard drive, and it's just kind of flaky, it hasn't actually fully flaked yet, take an image of the hard drive that you're running, pop a new hard drive in, push the image back onto your new hard drive, reboot, done. Fastest way to transfer a system from an old hard drive to a new hard drive. Same situation if you're upgrading the hard drive. You've got a 40, you started off with a 40 gig drive because that's all you had handy, and that worked fine for the first 6 months, and now you're out of room, and you just went and bought a 1 terabyte drive. Same problem. You put in a new drive, reinstall, reconfigure, blah, blah, blah. Or just, you know, just take the partition from the 40 gig drive and use an imaging tool to transfer it to your new 1 terabyte drive and reboot. You're done. Replacing the computer, basically the same idea. As long as it's compatible or you're running Linux, in which case it really doesn't make much difference, image the old computer, take an image of the old computer, write it to the new computer, boot it, you're done. Backing up a hard drive, something I do. Symantec/Norton actually sells a product for Windows PCs for personal use only. It takes an image of your hard drive. If you're running Windows 7, the built-in Windows backup tool now actually takes an image of your hard drive when you make a system image disk. So that when you restore, it's actually using disk imaging technology to put back a bit-for-bit exact copy. When you're testing, if you're about to load some fancy new software, Microsoft Visual Studio, being a classic example, that has a nasty tendency to completely obliterate the previous version of the software on your system, but you're not 100% sure about the upgrade, and you know that if it goes wrong, you're still going to need to be able to do work tomorrow. Take an image of your system, load the software that you are about to test, and whether test is you're just trying it out, or whether test is you're going to test the upgrade path, or whatever, and then restore the image when you're done. And lastly, resizing partitions.
That's what I was
thinking. Yeah. There's a lot of tools now that can actually just resize a partition in place. They just twiddle the partition table, they twiddle some of the file system parameters, and bing, magically your partition is bigger. or smaller, whatever, which is great, but if you're doing partitions that, for whatever reason, can't be edited in place, or you don't feel that it's safe to edit them in place for some reason, you can use disk imaging tools to accomplish the same thing. It basically just copies the image off, you redo your partition table, copy the image back on. Why? Why would you do this instead of reinstalling? Well, because it's a hell of a lot faster. You don't lose that week of downtime reinstalling, relocating, recompiling, if you're unlucky, all your applications. Keeps all your preferences. For me, that's not the end of the world. I've kind of gotten used to working with factory default systems. But for a lot of people, your personal system is tweaked to the nth degree. You've got custom settings for every single app you use. And last but not least, if you use imaging as a technique for doing any of the things we just talked about, you automatically have a backup of your system. Okay. Sorry. As a matter of fact, I think that is called Red Alert on the BlackBerry. I'll change it to vibrate. How many people have bought a new system and actually done a backup of it? Pretty much right away. Anyone? One, two, three, four. Okay, so four people out of this entire room actually remember to do a backup when they buy a new system so that they can restore it to original state if they need to. If you're doing an imaging-based process, let's say you're upgrading your computer, you have that backup. As long as you don't throw that file away or delete it, you've still got a backup. It's automatic. It's part of the process. Why would you do this versus just, say, installing a new system and copying all the files over? It can still be much faster. Ubuntu, this thing's running Ubuntu Netbook Remix 9.10 right now. Just a default out-of-the-box install. I think I maybe applied the patches. I'm not sure. Reimaging it took about 3 minutes. I did, obviously, one of the last things I did to this box before I tacked it up at home, I managed to blow away the boot record. So it did not boot. I had no idea what was on there. I'm thinking, oh, great, and I'm supposed to do a presentation on this machine in 10 minutes. That's not going to fly. Yeah, 3 minutes later, Ubuntu Netbook Remix is back on with all the files. And that's like multi-gigabytes of data. So, granted, I didn't have a lot of data to copy back on. In fact, I had no data to copy back on. But the speed issue is hard to overstate. Versus copying. You can't lose files. I've done this to myself many times. New PC. Typically, I do this with Windows machines, not Linux boxes, but set up the new machine, plug in the old hard drive temporarily, drag and drop all my files over, format the old hard drive. A week later, discover I missed those few, like, I missed the database files that were stored in some obscure path that wasn't under my user directory. Do it using imaging. You can't lose files. You've got the whole hard drive. And again, you implicitly have a backup. I may sound like I'm harping on the backup thing. This was the first year when I had multiple hard drives die on me. Hence why I'm harping on the backup thing. Now, I know John's not here, but why would you do this instead of just using DD? DD actually works great and is, in fact, preferable for some applications, forensic applications being one of those. Because imaging typically doesn't image the empty space on your disk. And in fact, that's why it's so much faster. Because it just skips over all of the disk that you're not using right now. It only copies the allocated sectors. And it compresses them, usually. Kevin, question?
No, I just wanted to add, sometimes doing a, I don't know if you're going to mention this later, but sometimes doing one of these disk images and then restoring it does a defrag as well.
Yes, for some file systems, that's, in fact, for EXT3 file systems, it's one of the only ways to defrag an EXT3 file system, because there is no defrag tool native. But that is an excellent point. In fact, I've used that. It's not uncommon, it's not guaranteed, but to take, say, a Windows machine, even with the NTFS file system, image it, restore the image onto the exact same hard drive, haven't done anything else to it, and bing, your machine's about 10-15% faster. Because it didn't just defragment all the files, it also defragmented all the MFT tables, all the directories, and all the files.
When you, you said do it disk image, then just load the disk image back onto the hard drive, right?
Yep.
Do you have to wipe out that hard drive first before you can restore the image?
Generally speaking, and this isn't universally true, but 99% of the time, the act of re-imaging the drive blows away whatever's on it.
Okay, it just does that automatically. You don't actually have to wipe out the hard drive before you do the...
You can if you want, because you've got an exact image of everything that was on the hard drive. But generally speaking, no, you don't have to reformat the hard drive in between. If there was possibly confidential data on the hard drive, and you're giving it to someone else, you might want to reformat the drive anyway, just to be on the safe side. Because if you had a hard drive that was full, 750 gigabyte drive, it's full of data, you're going to give that hard drive or that machine, say, to someone else. So you reload your standard image, regardless of what OS it is. But the standard image only takes, say, 30 gigs. Well, the other 720 gigs of hard drive haven't been touched. So if you use a data recovery tool, you might still be able to get back confidential data from the parts of the disk that weren't overwritten when you re-imaged it. So there are situations where you would want to reformat the drive in between. But other than confidentiality, the only other reason I could think of would be a situation like we discussed earlier tonight, where you started to get some bad sectors, you want to do the equivalent of what used to be called a low-level format to remap all the bad sectors. But again, the act of re-imaging would usually take care of that for you anyway.
But only for the part you're writing? Yeah.
True. DD! Okay, fine, yes. There are some situations in which DD would possibly be more appropriate, although it's usually the slowest of the available options. It's usually consumes the most space, the most time. If you use DD, unless you pipe it to gzip or something like that, which I've done, I've done that. In fact, I've used DD, piped it to Netcat to do an image across the network.
Yeah.
And it works, but man, is it slow. In fact, the network was congested. The network was already overloaded, so I was doing DD, piping to gzip-9, piping that to Netcat, and then the reverse pipe on the target machine. And I think a 30-gig image was taking like 8 hours. Mm-hmm. But it worked.
And DD, if there's any confidential information on the original machine, DD will preserve it all flawlessly.
Yes.
So you're not cleaning the drive to be given away from DD.
Nor do you get the benefit of defragmentation or anything like that.
You're basically Xerox copying the drive.
Yeah.
With all its spots and images and streaks and everything else.
The other big problem with DD is that you can only use it if the target drive is at least exactly as big as the source drive. It can be bigger, but it can't be smaller. Mm-hmm. It can't be even one byte smaller. Whereas re-imaging tools, that's part of the process, is dealing with resizing the partition. I think Trevor had the first question.
Yeah, well, two other things. You can loop back mount a DD mount to handy in the back of the drive again, and stuff file. And second of all, with DD, you don't have to trust anyone's algorithms. Mm-hmm. Whereas with all the other tools, you have to trust that they're not making mistakes.
You still have to.
NTFS tools, ones that understand NTFS.
You still have to trust the authors of DD, the authors of the operating system, the authors of the device driver, the authors of the firmware in your hard drive.
It's been around for 40 years, so I think the bugs have worked out in DD.
Well, Semantic Ghost, to take the grand old lady of the industry, Semantic Ghost was introduced in the early 80s. So that code base has been around for nigh on 30 years now. Granted, it didn't understand NTFS 30 years ago, but...
When I think of imaging, straight, I was thinking of something very much like DD. So what you're talking about with hard image is something different. It's something that's file system aware.
Yes.
And
usually.
I mean, if it's defragging, obviously it's... Mm-hmm. It knows, it has to know where the blank spaces are, so it understands the file systems.
Yes. And that's actually the limitation of some of the tools, is that the better tools understand a wide variety of file systems. When they come across a file system they understand, they use that knowledge to speed up the process by skipping over unallocated sectors. Pardon me. For example, speed up the image by skipping over unallocated sectors. They can rewrite files in order. The better tools, when they encounter a file system that they don't recognize, they default to a mode of operation that actually looks an awful lot like just doing DD, and they take a bitwise copy of the partition. Obviously, then they also can't resize it easily when you restore it to a new drive, but at least you've still got the image. In fact, part image, which is probably the most common and most popular tool on the Linux side, I discovered earlier today, does not understand ext4 file systems. Well, yet. I'm sure it will, but it doesn't as of the current version. So when I went to image Ubuntu Netbook, the Ubuntu Netbook Remix that's loaded on this drive right now, fired up part image, went to image it, error. Try again, error. Tried it about 5 different ways, error. Of course, it wasn't giving me anything useful like, sorry, I don't support ext4. It was giving me errors like, can't read block 0. Because ext4 looks an awful lot like ext3, just close enough that it couldn't tell that it was it thought it was dealing with an ext3 file system, and basically errored out very rapidly. I wound up using part clone, which does understand ext4. The last 2 points about versus DD apply to some people in certain circumstances, not to others. Not so much of an issue for individual users doing this for backup purposes, but it's easier to manage multiple files when they're small. Because I've had to do both, and if you're using a tool like DD to image like multi-hundred gigabyte hard drives, you better have one big honking RAID array to store all of these images on. And even then, you run out of space real fast. The other thing is, multicast and broadcast with imaging tools, it's real easy to deploy, say, an entire lab's worth of machines simultaneously using multicast, so it doesn't flood the whole network. You're not using unicast, so you can still do wire speed within the lab. I've done about, I think the biggest I've ever done was about 40 machines simultaneously. That was without killing the rest of the network, which is the usual consequence. And the multicast algorithms have to have some sort of flow control. So it was about, I'd say, 3/4 of the speed that I would normally get. But tons. Sorry?
3/4 of the time.
Yeah. Like it was 3/4 as fast as 1-to-1. But it was 3/4 times 40. Yeah. That's so, amazing. Yeah, that was a dramatic improvement. In fact, with part image, I can even restore, I can image and restore over the internet if I want to. I've got a part image D server running at home that if we had, you know, multiple hours or I had 100 megabit connectivity at home, either of the two, I could suck down an entire image for this PC across the net. Which, again, I could do that with DD images, too, but then I'd be using SSH to get my DD image. Yeah. I'd have to be... just the level of complexity keeps going up and up and up, whereas here we have tools that built in. How? Handling the DOS and Windows case first. Norton and Symantec Ghost is pretty much the gold standard. They were the first... Ghost was the first tool to do this. Actually, that's a lie. The first tools to do this were hardware devices that just copied from one drive to another drive. The first software to do this was Ghost, and it was from some company whose name I don't remember because they got bought up by Norton Lickety Split. Symantec then bought Ghost and ruined it. Just like every other product they bought. Yes, and I'm here to present a completely unbiased, objective view of the industry tonight. Not. Nonetheless, Ghost is still the gold standard. If Ghost can't do it, you're talking about a fairly esoteric feature. Across True Image, there's a personal edition available that you can use either free or really, really cheap. Drive Image XML is a perfect example of marketing over technology, because really, what does XML have to do with Drive Imaging? Anybody? Because it's not storing it as an XML CData blob. I know that. the Drive Image XML is available for personal use for free, and there's a tool called Self Image that images. Self-image is actually one of the interesting ones. It actually images the running operating system using VSS writers, or readers, as the case may be.
It's got a bare metal restore option, too, though.
Yep. I think so.
You bring the little thing to the CD, you boot the CD, and point it at the drive and write.
Pretty much. Yeah, part image and part clone under Linux both have that functionality as well. Under macOS, you've got ASR, which is sort of your gold standard for macOS. You've got Apple Disk Utility, which can create images in a variety of formats. Carbon Copy Cloner and Super Duper pretty much round out the list. And they're all free, at least for personal use, on macOS.
Windows
Oh, okay.
Automated.
That would require that you actually be brave enough to buy something with Windows Home Server on it. Oh yeah, it's a complete product line. It's
tripleware.
Yeah, pretty much. Question?
The larger generic hard drive shouldn't work as a time machine to push source.
It's not in ROM, but a time machine volume can be moved. Time machine is technically a backup utility, not an image utility, but you can get much the same results through a backup utility, too. Yep. And since it's built into 10.5 and newer, it's remarkably handy. And actually, if you haven't ever used ASR or disk utility to do imaging, Time Machine is actually probably an easier way to do it on a Mac for your average user. And then, under Unix, our options are relatively limited. There's Part Image, which there's three other tools that use Part Image. CloneZilla, which also uses Part Clone, also uses there's an NTFS-specific tool whose name I can't remember, and also uses DD, and it basically uses them in order of priority, tries to figure out what's the best tool to use for this partition. System Rescue CD is actually maintained by some of the same people who maintain Part Image. So, big surprise, it contains Part Image.
I booted CloneZilla earlier. CloneZilla on one USB stick, System Rescue CD on the other stick. You can use CDs as well as USB sticks, just USB is more reliable than CDs on this particular piece of art. PING stands for Part Image is Not Ghost. PING is actually, I should expand on these three a little bit more. CloneZilla is designed to be a replacement, full-bore replacement for commercial products like Symantec Ghost Suite or Acronis True Image Suite, where it provides a server, an imaging server, that you can netboot an entire organization's worth of PCs from. It's got menuing systems to pick the image you want to restore. It's like it's got everything basically built in. You just have to walk through the setup and make sure you've started all the various services. System Rescue CD is much more generic. It's got a bunch of tools to, rescue your system from whatever damage you might have done to it. Ping is specifically targeted at Windows environments, which I think explains perhaps a little bit of its name, is that it's designed to be literally a drop-in replacement for Ghost, and all of the documentation for Ping is targeted at Windows administrators. For example, the NetBoot service in Ping, the documentation steps you through integrating it with RIS, remote install services, on a Windows server. And it talks about how you set up the file share on your Windows server to hold the images, etc.
Does Ping understand Ghost files?
I have no idea. I didn't see any reference to that, but one of the other two utilities, Ghost for Unix and Ghost for Linux, G4U, G4L, which are two completely separate projects that have nothing to do with one another, except accusations back and forth. that, you know, you stole my code, no, you stole my code. True. The projects have matured a little bit in the last few years. Well, let's say the developers, one of them might have. one of those two was trying to read Ghost files at some point. I don't know if it was ever really implemented. But G4U and G4L are not part image-based. They're not part clone-based. They are something else, like they're their own thing altogether. G4U actually predates the existence of Linux. It's been around for... I first saw it running on Sun OS system. So it's been around for a while. G4L, unsurprisingly, is a product. It was pretty quick. Demo, if time permits. I think time permits. I have... I have a 2.5-inch hard drive, external, USB. I have a USB key with System Rescue CD prepared on it. I will boot System CD is what the project is really usually known as. And we'll just restore the keys. That's a 1 gig key, but you can fit SysRest CD onto a USB key. I think it fits onto a 5-fold meg key, and it's a full live CD, Gen 2 based. You can run X. I mean, it's not NOPX. It's targeted for emergency maintenance. It doesn't have, you know, doesn't have Open Office, for example. But
file format, file system is the external hard drive.
It's formatted as EXT3 right now, just no particular reason. It's actually a much more common scenario would have been for it to be FAT32 formatted. All of these tools, by the way, as far as I know, have enough brains to automatically split files just shy of the 2 gig limit.
Will that work with NTFS?
Yes. Part image, part clone. All three of the tools that I discussed for Linux handle NTFS volumes just fine. Okay. Having said that, I haven't tested any of them with Windows 7. But Windows 7, I don't think, introduces a new version of NTFS. So if it works with Vista, it should work fine with Windows 7. Early versions of Ghost had some problems with Windows Server operating systems, but that hasn't been a problem for several years. As I said, this SysRest CD is Gen 2 based, which is both good and bad. This is the bad part, as we see boot. There we go. Is that running? Yes, it is. And it's SDB1. Can everybody see what I'm typing at the bottom of the screen? How about if I type it at the top of the screen? So SDB1 is the external hard drive. Looking at partitions, SDA is the internal hard drive. I'm just going by size because I happen to know how big those hard drives are. So it's an 80 gig hard drive internally. SDC is the 1 gig USB stick. SDB is the 60 gig external drive here. So I've mounted the external drive. and there's two images on it. The UNR. There is no standard extension for partition image files. The PIMG is just what I call it. So, run part image. Oh, the images themselves are. ...764 megs for a compressed image of Intel Moblin Linux, which is what I'm about to restore. Actually, that's just using the standard gzip compression. Mm-hmm. If I tweaked it to use gzip-9 or to use bzip2, it would have gotten substantially smaller. If I used part clone instead, part clone also offers LZO and LZMA compression. So, yeah, you can keep on squeezing. One interesting feature that part image has that I'm not going to demonstrate tonight, but I'll tell you about, is that if you boot off a CD that has part image, and there are some limitations involved, but if you boot off, say, a sysresc CD, and you use the 2RAM parameter on the kernel command line so that it loads the entire CD into RAM and runs out of memory. Not runs out of memory as it exhausts memory, it is like running from memory, is what I mean. Part image can actually burn a bootable CD with the first whatever is left over, 500 megs of disk image on the first CD. And then it'll continue on to the second, the third, and fourth CDs or DVDs, as the case may be. So it's basically what we call a self-hosting solution. So, part image. Partition I wish to save or restore, SDA1. Sounds good. Image file to use. Mount, backup, moblin.pimg. I'm going to restore partition from an image file. You'll note the third option here, restore an MBR from an image file. In this version of part image, those are two separate operations. In part clone, does it all at once. Depends on which tool you're using, but they pretty much all have the ability to restore the boot sectors. The option I'm not going to use right now is connect to server. Actually, you know what? I'll just show it. When I'm connecting to a server, I don't specify a path. It's just relative to where PartImageD stores it. And server.8homeso.net, so I will just... I made sure that port was open earlier today. Port 4025 by default. My login. And this is SSL protected. Of course, I didn't check to actually see that I had networking. Oh, wait a minute. We've got a firewall that blocks. Okay, I'm not going to show that then.
You didn't run that setup yet, did you? Express CD? Or do you not?
You're right, I didn't. Yep, apparently. Takes a long while. Are you actually sure it's working?
I did this for a while. Not true.
Yeah, okay. Oops. We'll restore from the hard drive in the meantime.
Are you saying that the MBR doesn't get restored? So you actually have to...
If the MBR is correct, yeah.
With... partition is too small to be restored. Thank you. Okay. I know I've seen image-based tools that do all of this automatically. Obviously, I'm not doing it that way. So I'm going to do it the hard way. D2, D1. Recreate my full-size partition. Can you tell I've done F-disk a lot? Word image. There we go, SDA1. Now it's a 70... Sorry? No, I've done that far too many times in recent history.
On this machine, on the looks of it.
Right. Restore. Continue. Simulate the restoration. No, I don't think I'm going to bother doing that. One option PartImage does have here is to zero out the remainder of the body, which would potentially take care of the security issues that we talked about earlier. There we go. I'm going to use 3% of that volume. So, yeah, I mean, 2.86 gigs of data shrunk down to, what was it, 700 and something? Mm-hmm. So, that's fairly typical. You really want to restore? Yes, I want to restore. Okay. Apparently, we are in a time warp. As we watch 4 minutes become three, becomes two, becomes one. Is obviously approaching the correct solution. Iteratively. speed, yeah, it's... I was actually getting a little bit better speed out of part clone than part image tonight.
What size?
I don't know. I'm not sure why.
Buffer size in the app, too. How much RAM is in that box?
2 gigs.
It's a lot bigger than the box size.
Yeah.
Still a hell of a lot faster than Ghost Builder, huh?
Yes. Actually, the 32-bit version of Ghost that runs in WinPE can get speeds approaching this.
You just download the free deed and you're just trying to restore the disks that somebody sent over. It's painful. It's the first thing that Ghost has to do if you have a 5 DVD set is go through all 5 DVD and do some mapping. And then you start back over with disk one. So it was... it was all day.
In a worst case scenario, yeah.
Adam, do you use this technology in your machine?
Yes, I do. Okay. I will admit that, generally speaking, I don't often do images of Linux or Unix-based machines.
But they have anything you
know. Well, there's that. Yes, hard drives do fail, but generally I'm not doing mass deployments of Linux boxes.
Not yet.
Actually, the last time I did an image-based technique for servers was the day that I had to use DD piped into gzip piped into netcat because I had a set of 6 or 8 identical servers, and I wanted the OS load to be identical, not just theoretically identical. Because in theory, I could have used like a kickstart file or something to accomplish the same thing, and probably faster, too, in that particular scenario. Had I had the benefit of, say, a USB 2 port on those stupid machines, this was a while ago, then I would have used an external hard drive and done an image that way. But I was rather limited by the technology I had at my disposal. Okay, so it just... how long did it take? Under 2 minutes to restore... Come on, power. To restore a full Moblin image onto this machine. Not until it shut down, because that's when I booted off.
Oh, wait.
And I didn't bother unmounting the hard drive either, so... I'll just wait. Again, the downside of using a Gentoo-based live CD is that it is running a full Gentoo system.
It's type syncing. It's live CDs, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yes, theoretically, I could do that. Now I'll unplug the devices. So the only storage device in there now is the internal hard drive. That was onto a mobile hard drive, by the way. Not a 3.5-inch desktop drive. So on a 3.5-inch drive... Typical desktop drive. It wasn't 5400
RPM.
Did you?
Yeah. No, I didn't. No, I didn't. So I would have to do the MBR as well.
Good lesson.
What time did we want to get out of here? 10 minutes ago?
We'll take the MBR as well.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, I would have to also restore the MBR, which I forgot to do.
Can you select both of those, or does it only do one at a time?
This script, one at a time, I think some of the systems I've used in the past wrap part image into a bunch of shell scripts that presumably must have called both, because...
Mozilla does it.
Does it? Okay. Yeah, that's what I used to restore the Ubuntu image onto here earlier. And it obviously did the MBR because I didn't have the blown-up MBR that I do now.
So if your friend's got a Windows system, you would, say, use Ghost, eh?
Depends what I had available. If I had a copy of Ghost, I might use Ghost. It depends. It's really situation-dependent. If I have a local hard drive on fairly new hardware, I'd probably use Clonezilla, because now, if it was a Windows 7 box or, say, a Windows Server 2008 box, I'd want to test it out first. But for XP, it's rock solid.
Okay.
For XP, the NTFS code in part image and part clone and NTFS blank, I can't remember what the tool is called, in my experience, is more stable than the NTFS code in Ghost. Because I've had Ghost blow up on me under certain types of file system corruption, whereas most of the Linux-based tools just observe the corruption, pop up a warning saying, by the way, you're imaging a corrupt file system, and continue happily along. Whereas Ghost locks up, crashes, whatever. So, yeah, Clonezilla would probably be my first choice. Sysresk CD if I needed a lot of manual control over what I was doing, but otherwise Clonezilla. Questions?
I ran into a problem with Windows. It used to use 2000 code, and I would boot to a Linux CD and use the DD command to ghost one drive onto it.
Yep.
So it was fine for system backup and so on. But if I cloned a data drive, it still somehow knew, the operating system knew, that it was a different drive and would remap all my drive letters.
Yep.
Very annoying. Does it access a serial number or something on the drive?
Yep. It can, but the drive signature changes under Windows 2000. Did you? No, actually, under 2000, it shouldn't have.
Was it NTFS or was it
NTFS
option?
No, it was NTFS.
I was using a file system.
Then it definitely shouldn't have happened. Oh, yes, it will. Because Windows 2000 stores the disk signature at the end of the disk, not the start of the disk. So if you're DDing, say, a smaller drive onto a larger drive, even if it was only larger by a sector, you'll find that unless it's the exact same model and the exact same firmware rev and the exact same PCB rev and the exact same everything, you'll find that, like, if I go buy two Western Digital 320 gig drives, I won't say it's normal, but it's common for them to not be the identical size. And the only difference will be, maybe they'll both be WD3200JB drives, or BB or whatever, and one will be 00E0 and one will be 00F4 as the specific part number, and that's enough to be like just a couple hundred bytes off.
There's something at the very end that wasn't equal.
I would assume that was what was happening with Windows 2000, particularly for FAT32. I can't think of any other reason that would happen, unless the original hard drive was still connected to the system. Like, if you have both drives plugged in when you rebooted Windows 2000, then, okay, then yeah, that's the only thing I can think of. Sidwalker? I don't, usually, because anything newer than Windows 2000, there's other ways to take care of that problem. Like that, with Windows 2000, you had to use a tool like that. Or you ran into all sorts of nasty, weird crap happening on your network. With XP and newer, it can still cause problems, but not the same magnitude as you'd run into with 2000. So usually with XP, it's either I'm using an imaging tool that does it automatically, and there's no separate tool to run. It's just part of the process. Or it's not in a domain environment, so it's irrelevant. So it's yes, the functionality exists,
if you use part clone, for example, there is still another tool that's run, NTFS SID change or something called like that. But it's all wrapped into the scripts and menus that Clonezilla presents. So you don't have to see it, you don't have to know about it, you don't have to run it. So, yeah, it's taken care of for you, pretty much.
Okay. I'll try to make this quick. You know what we do at the lab? We have massive rollouts of 2000s and XPs for loan.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to XP, it wants to be activated. Your recommendation, activate first and then do a clone, or don't activate and then activate each individual machine?
You'd have to activate each.
Well, actually, for Windows XP, my recommendation would be to use a volume license key instead and skip the whole activation issue altogether. Mm-hmm. You should be eligible to obtain Windows XP refurbish keys.
Yeah, we have a MARA license.
Then you shouldn't be dealing with activation at all.
Yeah, they're supplying us with individual stickers with individual key codes on them that we have to activate.
Mm. You know what? If you put the sticker on the box,
yeah,
but load an OEM copy of Windows instead with an OEM key, you're still legal.
But
the laptop uses it. Yeah.
No, because then there's no... Sorry, not OEM key. E-open.
But OEM key is the same thing.
No, OEM...
That's what the laptop guys do.
And that does require activation.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the laptop... You take a laptop, put a new hard drive in it,
yeah,
reinstall Windows and try and use that code in the sticker, that code in the sticker's back in
there. That's a fairly common scenario, yeah.
You replace the hard drive, you lose the magic partition, and basically you can't go home again.
Because there's also a corollary. We're installing it onto equipment that's not necessarily the same. So let's say we've got an IBM versus a Dell versus mine versus whatever.
Mm-hmm. The easiest way to solve your problem is to bend the MAR rules slightly. Not break, bend. Interpret creatively. Which is essentially what every other MAR who's doing volume, any kind of volume, does. Because the MAR program, as written word for word in that license, is pretty much useless, as discovered. So you work around it, and you stay within the bounds of your MAR license, technically, at least according to one lawyer I asked.
Okay.
Well, yeah, that's...
It's the building.
That's another perfectly viable option, is don't use Windows.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is if you use the latest version of the Windows Imaging Toolkit, or at least the last version that was still XP compatible, you can tell it to rerun mini setup at first boot, which takes care of the differences in hardware. As long as it's the same HAL. If you go, like, one, you'd need an ACPI HAL and a non-ACPI. Other than that, you can get it down to two images instead of one per discrete piece of hardware. And the time, there's a little bit more time involved, because then you have to boot each machine, let it run through the hardware detection routine, reinstall whatever device drivers are necessary, reboot three more times for no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But so you simplify one end of the process at the expense of just taking a little more time at the other end of the process. But yeah, there's ways to manage that.
And it's still a whole lot faster than installing on 12 machines.
Yes.
Yes.
Much. Anyway, any quick questions left? Since you'd probably like us to get out of here so you can go home.
All right. Please join me in thanking Adam for his presentation.